Well, good evening, everyone. Here at the Wall Street Zendo, out there at the Sherbrooke Street Zendo, and in the Zoom realm. Over these summer weeks, we've been working our way through the 10 chapters of this book called We Were Made for These Times, 10 Lessons for Moving Through Change, Loss, and Disruption by Kyra Jewel Lingo, who is a teacher in the tradition, the Vietnamese Zen tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh. She spent many years, from the time she was quite young, until she was about 40, I think, if I recall correctly, as a nun in the monastery in that tradition, and then moved back into the world, into life as a layperson, which was a huge step for her to take. She talks about that in the book. I want to thank those who contributed readings from here as we moved through the chapters, and commentary, and also Dharma talks on Sundays when Michael and I were away for a few weeks camping and hiking in the mountains. It was really great to know that the Zendo was well supported in our absence, not only by those who gave talks, but for those who took care of the Zoom and sat in the Eno seat and gave us guidance, everybody who kept time, everybody who helped out. So we've come to the last chapter in the book, chapter 10, which is really a review and a summation of the rest. And it begins with a reference to the source of the book's title, We Were Made for These Times. It comes from a passage from Clarissa Pinkola Estes, a Jungian therapist and writer known years ago, probably the early 90s, for a book that was very popular at the time called Women Who Run with Wolves. Anybody remember that? Those who are of a vintage to remember. I confess I actually never read that book. But this quote comes from, I'm not sure if it's a book, I think it was a short book that she wrote called Letter to a Young Activist During Troubled Times. I'm going to read you the quote. My friends, do not lose heart. We were made for these times. I have heard from so many recently who are deeply and properly bewildered. Ours is a time of almost daily astonishment and often righteous rage over the latest degradations of what matters most. You are right in your assessments. Yet I urge you, ask you, gentle you, to please not spend your spirit dry by bewailing these difficult times. Especially do not lose hope, most particularly because the fact is that we were made for these times. Yes, for years we have been learning, practicing, been in training for, and just waiting to meet on this exact plane of engagement. So I feel that the spirit of her words is wise and generous, but I'm going to take issue with the statement, we were made for these times. Even though I've recommended this book, and I do recommend it strongly, I appreciate the way Kyra Jewel Lingo offers us a kind of toolkit of practices, of mindfulness practices that all are helpful for us living in, as she says, times of change, loss, and disruption. More so than any other time in human history, it does seem like a greater scale and magnitude than ever before, with higher stakes than ever, what with climate change, extreme weather, wildfires, warming oceans, melting ice caps, not to mention megalomaniac national leaders threatening to use nuclear weapons, human rights abuses, etc., etc. And yet, we must realize that throughout human histories, empires have crumbled many times. Civilizations have collapsed. Great famines, plagues, and wars have decimated populations many times before. And so far, there have always been survivors. And so far, there's always been those who carried the lamp of human kindness, of creativity, of generosity, of healing, those who have worked to alleviate suffering, to help and heal. There's always been those. So we have choices about how we live in these times. We can choose to be those who make it worse, among those who make it worse, or those who carry the lamp. And there are liberating practices that support our capacity to make those choices. But are we made for these times? Something about that declaration has been bothering me all along. Because to be made in the passive tense implies a maker, an external force. Who or what might that be? If we don't hold a belief in a supreme deity, why would we use this phrasing? Who is making us? It's like when people say, it was meant to be. Meant by whom? Fate? Destiny? Karma? But that's not what karma is. Karma is the effect, the outflow of our intentional speech and actions. It's a complex, dynamic interrelationship of cause and effect between conscious human beings living in this world. And there are a lot of other factors that enter in and affect our circumstances. As I was printing out my notes for this talk, I looked over at a pile of books. There are piles of books in our house. And I saw this one, Discovering the True Self by Kodo Sawaki. And something just said, pull out that book. So I did. Kodo Sawaki was Michael's and my first Soto Zen teacher in Japan's teacher's teacher. So our teacher was Okumura Shohaku Roshi, who was young. We were young men, and he was young too. His teacher was Kosho Uchiyama Roshi, and his teacher was Sawaki Kodo Roshi, otherwise known as Homeless Kodo, as he wandered. Anyway, so I did this kind of Zen divination where I just opened the book. And here's what I read. We were not born simply because of karma. So we weren't born for a specific purpose. Huh. Buddhist practice is not illumined by destiny. Contemplate the earth below the sun and moon and take no pride in the merit of your contemplation. Buddha Dharma is working moment by moment, connecting mind and body. You can't say where it is, it's not a fixed thing. So there is his exact answer to this question of, you know, were we made for these times? So here's my counter to that way of putting it. As conscious human beings, we have certain capacities. And we have obstacles to the full realization of those capacities. We all are subject to greed, hate, and delusion, the three poisons in Buddhist thought, right? Because of thousands and thousands of years of conditioning through generations and generations, of course we're all subject to greed, hatred, and delusion. We've evolved as a species, both individually and collectively, to this point in time, and we really don't know. We really don't know what the next decades, centuries, or millennia will bring. We really don't know. But we don't have to be paralyzed by that not knowing. Because we also have the capacity for all the qualities identified as part of our Buddhist and Zen practice. We can find them in the Eightfold Path. Right view, right intention, right speech, right conduct, right livelihood, right effort, right concentration, and right mindfulness. We have all those capacities. And we find them in what we call the paramitas, or perfections. Wisdom, generosity, patience, ethical conduct, determination, or energy, concentration, and wisdom. And we find these capacities in what are called the Brahma Viharas, or noble abodes, loving kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity. We have all these capacities, right? They are our birthright. They are within us. They're part of our nature. And, of course, we have the factors that obstruct them, that hinder us from expressfully expressing those capacities in our lives. The classic hindrances, they're called hindrances because they cloud our clear mind and thus impair our speech and actions, right? Because our view is distorted, our perception's distorted. And they are, the traditional hindrances are greed, aversion, agitation, dullness, also known as sloth and torpor. I love that, sloth and torpor. Dullness and doubt. So each of those obstructs our clear mind. But when we know that, we can notice them. And we can notice what conditions those states, and we can let them go. We could probably add more to that list of hindrances, like envy, boredom, irritability, anxiety. We could each make our customized list of our personal main hindrances, right? But we have choices to make. Whether we nourish the seeds of those beneficial qualities or those that lead to suffering for ourselves and others. And sometimes they're just tiny little choices, just everyday little choices, you know, as to where we direct our attention or what we say or don't say. But if we're not paying attention, we won't catch those choice points. And if we're continuously distracted and oblivious, we'll miss those opportunities. So we build the foundations of mindfulness, of paying attention to body and mind. Using this kind of scaffolding of practice, this toolkit, right? That's mixing metaphors, but these practices support us in times of instability and uncertainty, which life brings, right? Life brings lots of difficult times. So we need that kind of support of these practices. So that's really, really, what I really appreciated about Kyra Jewel Lingo's book, is that she just kind of gives us an assortment of practices, and different practices may be important to you at different times in your life of practice. You don't have to do them all the time. And in this last chapter, she invites us to imagine our lives as if we had already developed these qualities, these practices. She asks us to visualize ourselves. In Tibetan Buddhism, there are practices where practitioners visualize in great detail a deity or bodhisattva, and almost then invite that being into one's own being, merge with that being through visualizing. And it's not something we do very often in Zen. And she's, in her guided meditation in the book, she's asking us to visualize ourselves. And I realize that's a little hard to do. It's one thing to visualize the Kannon, the Bodhisattva of compassion, at the top of my head, and then having her come down into my heart. I can do that. But to visualize myself is harder. So I realized, looking, you know, kind of reading her her guided meditation, that it's more a matter of feeling, like, how would I feel? How, using my imagination to feel the effect and power of each of these practices. So I'm gonna go through this guided meditation with you. Now, some of you have been here for some of these weeks, some of you have missed some, and some of you haven't been here at all. That's okay too. Just relate to this as much as you can as we go. And if visualization is helpful, use it. But it also, you can do it in more of a feeling sense in your body. You know, how does it feel in your heart or in your belly to imagine these practices being part of your life, really deeply part of your life. So, I'll invite you to sit in a comfortable position and close your eyes as we do this, if you feel comfortable doing so. And take a moment just to connect with your breath and the sense of your body sitting grounded, supported by the earth, held in place by the gravity of this great earth. Take a few nice deep breaths. And then just imagine for a moment, you know, facing a storm, a literal storm or a life storm, a stormy relationship, a stormy event, an accident, all the different kinds of storms that life presents us. And imagine having come through that storm, you have survived. And you've come back to stillness. And just take a moment to feel that. How does that feel, having survived that storm? You're safe. It's quiet. You are safe in body and mind. You're at home in yourself. How does that feel, to feel deeply at home in this body and mind right now? and you are ready to face whatever life brings next. With a kind of patient, calm spaciousness of mind. With a largeness of heart. The word courage contains the word heart, cœur. So you have a sense of your own courage. Not to turn away from what's painful, not to turn away from suffering, your own or that of others. And you have a sense of trust. Trust in your capacity. Trust in some of the practices that you are learning and have learned. So one of those practices is deeply to see into the impermanence of all things. We learned the five remembrances that tell us that we are of the nature to grow old, to have ill health, and to die. And that ultimately we let go, we lose everything that is of meaning to us. All our possessions, all those who are dear to us, our very own lives. And what continues is our karma, the outflow of everything we have said or done or not said or not done continues in ways that we can never know. So one of our practices is to remember. Impermanence. And to deeply see that truth as liberation. And another practice that we learned is stability in the face of the eight worldly winds, not being buffeted about in the winds of praise or blame, loss or gain, shame or disrepute, pleasure or pain, but to stay steady, whatever comes. To know that all the causes and conditions that affect us are beyond, so far beyond our small, limited sense of self, and that we are always connected. Always in relationship, dynamic relationship with all things. And another practice that we learned is the practice of loving kindness, practices of loving kindness and compassion. Extending those qualities to ourselves, and then to others. In the practice of joy. Joy in the well-being of others. And the practice of equanimity. Meeting whatever comes with open heart and mind, with stability. How does it feel to have these practices confidently at hand when you need them? Even if you don't ordinarily feel that way, imagine yourself as having that confidence. How does that feel? That trust in these practices of liberation, even when you are wobbly. Out of balance, you can come back. Come back to center. Imagining that confidence, that courage in yourself, how does that feel in your heart, in your belly? How does it feel in your hands? How does it feel in your eyes? This is the feeling of your courage, your big heart. You can come back to in times when you are fearful and shaky. You can touch the earth like the Buddha did so long ago when he sat under the Bodhi tree and the armies of Mara assailed him with doubt. You can touch the earth too and find courage. This meditation concludes with the words of a song from the Vietnamese Zen tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh. I don't know the tune, but the words go. The words are from the Metta Sutta, or Loving Kindness Sutta. May I be happy. May I be free from pain and suffering. May I live with peace and well-being, and may I be free. And then imagine someone you would wish this for. May you be happy. May you be free from pain and suffering. May you live with peace and well-being, and may you be free. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free from pain and suffering. May all beings live with peace and well-being. May all beings be free. So I didn't ask for a bell, so I will just say ding. And thank you all for doing that little modified guided meditation from Kyra Jewel-Lingo, and we thank her for all the teaching she shared with us over the past 10 weeks. And stay tuned next week to see what we'll do for the coming weeks. We might spend some time with Kodo Sawaki Roshi. That's not something we've done before, although we've referenced him. So we might explore his life and teachings as we move towards the end of summer. So everyone, thank you for listening. And what we'll do in our little remaining time is I'd like to just kind of go around, rather than dividing up into little groups, and just ask each person what practice feels really important for you right now in your life of this. And it might be one from the book that we've talked about over the weeks, but just what particular aspect or practice feels really important to you right now. So we'll say, goodbye to the Sherbrooke Street people. Thank you. And you can do that over there by yourselves, and the Zoom folks can do it with each other. Each take a turn, and we'll do that right here.